Welcome to the St. David's podcast, Shining a Brighter Light. We are here to help you discern more about God's call in your life, the unique qualities of the light that God has placed in your heart, and the unique ways that you have been called to shine that light in this world. Today, I am joined by St. David's parishioner, Karen Wright, to do a little bit of a different format. We want to provide to you a window into what discernment looks like as a practice in the life of someone like you, someone who has walked this journey of life and walked it faithfully as a participant in church life and as a parent and somebody working in a secular field. So we have Karen Wright here to provide some insight into that, but Karen also has just a wonderful journey and has developed a wonderful contemplative and interior spiritual life in addition to her many ministries. And so what a great gift it is to have you with us, Karen, to help shine your light a little bit and guide us as participants on this path.
Thank you, Remington. I really appreciate that introduction, and I definitely appreciate all who are tuning into this. Our lives are really complicated, everybody. Mm-hmm. And we all need tools in order to do that magical thing called navigating through the bumpy roads. In my life, contemplative prayer has been incredibly helpful. I grew up in the Northeast, in a wonderful church that had fabulous programs available. But of course, as an adult, I had to do that magical thing of disconnecting from all my church connections until a woman invited me to attend church with her at lunchtime during Lent. Hmm. And every day we'd bring our little brown bag full of lunch, and she'd drive over to the Catholic church because, you see, she was Catholic. I was Presbyterian.
Okay.
And so the Catholic church was a little bit out of my comfort zone. But somewhere in all of that, I found answers to the many questions I presented in the Presbyterian church and either wasn't able to digest the answer at the time or finally heard answers that made sense to me.
These were theological questions?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somewhere in my youth and childhood, I always had questions about the reality and the working of God in all of our lives, and especially mine. So it was wonderful to finally be able to make some connections. And of course, that led me to start reading some magnificent books by authors that are now well known, but at the time I'd never even heard of them. And that introduced me to contemplative prayer.
Great. So painting the scene for us a little bit, you were Presbyterian in the Northeast. Sort of what age were you when you started to attend this Catholic church with your friend for their Lenten programming?
Oh, I had to have been 25.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So big questions left unanswered theologically, but 25 is often a really volatile period of identity forming for human beings, and a lot of existential questions probably floating around. Was that the case for you?
Oh, without a doubt. Hmm. The existential questions had kind of started prior to that. Mm-hmm. In school, I was, at one point, I was in charge of the Christian education of the entire school. Now, I was a student, and that was a student role to organize worship services and various different programs that went on. And I think that really lit the fire for me about wonder and understanding and what is this all about?
Right. And so you've got that fire stoked and then start to encounter authors and texts related to contemplative prayer. What are some of the books that you remember just calling out to you at that time?
Thomas Merton.
Sure.
Definitely Thomas Merton. I hadn't even heard of all the other authors at that time.
Yeah.
And then later, I was a young mother. I was exposed to The Other Side of Silence, A Guide to Christian Meditation by Morton Kelsey, who happens to be an Episcopal priest and was teaching at Notre Dame at the time. Already having an appetite for meditation, mm-hmm. this book just filled in all the blanks. And I had, I was not working at that time, but I had three little children and a very dysfunctional marriage. Mm. And what this book gave me was permission to spend time during nap time totally meditating and surrendering myself to God.
Wow.
And that surrendering is what I really believe meditation is. And then I would get up and I would just journal. And it helped me come to the place where I realized being a dedicated housewife was not going to make this marriage work.
Yeah.
In spite of my desire and need to do that. And it also gave me the strength to seek out other help, a psychologist, going to the Jesuit Center for Spiritual Growth, where more meditation was encouraged. And finally, that resolved the issue with the marriage. Not the way I would have wanted to have resolved it, but as we all know, God's way is not our way.
Right. The way that, I think we've named on the podcast before is that when we are trying to discern something, what we want to do is to get to a sort of a well-framed question, and the grace that we are asking for is assistance from God in answering that question. And if we haven't named that on the podcast before, I'm sorry. One resource that we've named in sermons is The Way of Discernment by Elizabeth Liebert, and certainly a couple of the chapters of that book early are dedicated to helping us form questions and ask for grace and clarity around those questions. So that said, your primary question was, how do I approach this marriage, and how do I resolve the, we'll say, circumstances or issues related to this marriage? That it wasn't about your job or necessarily your own identity at that time. It was in the relationship that you were doing discernment work. Is that right?
Correct. Wow. That is definitely correct.
And then the clarity that came after all of this prayer and journaling was, you can't fix it, not by more prayer, not by being a perfect stay-at-home mom. These things are not going to fix the relationship.
Correct.
Yeah. So I assume then pushes toward another question, and that's when you start to go into the deeper dives at the Jesuit Center and some other things on finding answers to the next questions, or were those two earlier pieces parallel to one another?
I would believe that in some respect they were parallel, but in the other respect they were definitely deeper dives that gave me the strength and the courage to be a single mom of three very, very small boys.
Yeah.
And start rebuilding a life, which brings meditation into my job.
Right. Yeah, so that fits the pattern that I would expect based on other encounters and then in my own life as well, which is that the clarity for the first question sometimes just comes in and confronts us in a way that is almost irresistible. But then 1,000 additional questions come that shatter all of these other illusions we have in our life and make us wonder. And some people respond with great anxiety. Other people are perfectly fine with all these things being disrupted. So there's no guarantee how anybody's going to respond to that. But now I have to wonder, what is my life going to look like outside of this marriage? What will my life look like as a working mother? Will I still live here in this place? All these additional questions. And so the discernment journey has now expanded tremendously. Was that scary for you? Was there a sense of peace?
How about terrifying?
Terrifying, yeah. Scary, yeah. Doesn't cover it.
It was terrifying. However, as each issue became resolved, there was clearly an incredible sense of peace.
Yeah.
And it was very evident to me that it was not me resolving these issues.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned a moment ago then that as you connect with this, you have clarity on one variable at a time, let's say. And one of those is that you say, I've got to get a job, a different job, and meditation's got to be a part of it.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Clarity about that. Where did that end up leading you?
Well, my skill set was being a computer engineer or software engineer or computer systems person. The job stays the same. The name changes mm-hmm. on a regular basis. And I did precisely that. I started pursuing getting a job in that field. Now I'm in a state where I have never worked in that field, so I couldn't call my buddy down the street and say, hey, I need a job. I had to start out fresh. Mm-hmm. And I had a number of fabulous interviews. I was so fortunate. And I must say that constantly in that field, I was extremely fortunate with the opportunities that I had. Part of me has always been leaning toward the exercise person, the person who eats nuts and grains mm-hmm. and feels very, very comfortable in that environment. And it just so happened that I lived very close to Rodale Press, which at the time was the number one place where you learned about running, you learned about swimming.
Bicycling magazine and all
exactly.
those. Yeah.
All those, yes. So I had multiple interviews, and then one day I had an interview with Rodale Press. And it was a no-brainer which job I was going to take. Hmm. So I joyously worked for Rodale Press for Pocket Change. And then one day the telephone rang and somebody in Atlanta, Georgia offered me a job. And I said no.
Hmm. So I'm curious on the side of the no-brainer with Rodale and the no then. Was this intuition driven? Did your body just scream no? Did you go through a process of really thinking these things over? It sounded immediate.
It does sound immediate in the way I explain it, but in fact it was really looking at where I wanted to be, what I wanted to do, how mm-hmm. I wanted to be able to be available to my children mm-hmm. as well as earn enough money to support them. So there was a huge amount of prayer that I grappled with on a regular basis, every evening. I'd get the kids in bed, because nap time is no longer part of the thing, you
sure.
know. And that would be my time to really surrender. And it was clearly, I felt, I was directed to Rodale Press. And indeed, they were very, very good to me through some really, really difficult times. And similarly, I chose the children's daycare center, because of course they had to go to daycare. The no from the, do you want to move to Atlanta? That was me.
Hmm.
I was comfortable. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to change. I knew where the potholes were in the road. I didn't want to go find new potholes.
Sure, yeah.
And a friend called me that night, and we were just talking, and I told her about this phone call from this guy in Atlanta, and she said, I think you should pursue this. Hmm. Let him call you tonight. Answer the phone and just listen to what he has to say. And I said no again.
Wow.
I did listen.
Yeah, cool. That's good.
I did listen. And then, and I was not praying about it. Mm-hmm. I was not offering it to God at that time. And then pretty soon, I'm dropping the kids off at school, and I'm stopping at the local Episcopal Church, St. Margaret's, and I would go in, and I would be there praying and praying, please, God, give me an answer. Shall I take this job in Atlanta, or shouldn't I? And one day it was very clear that it was that I should take that job.
Hmm.
If you think I was terrified before, I was seriously terrified. Here I am with these three little kids and I'm packing up all my little things mm-hmm. that I had in Pennsylvania and moving to Atlanta, Georgia, where I wasn't quite sure what I was getting into.
One thing that I hear and could be wrong about, so correct me if I am wrong, is what a strong sense of vocation you had around being a mom, that being a participant in Rodale Press was not necessarily a call given to you before you were born by God, though in discernment you realized what a clear yes that was. But maybe a higher order governing decision-making was, how am I going to continue to be the mom I want to be? And that as you set that into place and built a paradigm around that with Rodale, when the next call came disrupting the paradigm, even going back to that core identity as mom didn't provide immediate clarity. It actually did the opposite and put a no in place instead of a yes, because it would seem to have disrupted what was a really good way of pursuing that vocation as a mom. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the boys were involved in a wonderful church and they had a nice, comfortable life.
Yeah.
And did I want to unravel that whole
thing?
Right.
So for takeaways, to be clear for those of you who are listening, just, I know we say it all the time, but remember, it's nonlinear and it's fluid enough, or we perceive it as fluid enough, that a yes one day can be a no another day, and a no one day can be a yes another day, and that you've got to stay engaged and involved, which really, as I recall, then sounds like the way that you ultimately got to Atlanta was to continue to listen and pray and wonder and stay curious and until the cloudy picture resolved itself into the real answer. That may not be the right way of saying it, but the answer that you grabbed hold of as the answer that would drive you into a new place.
That's exactly right. You've really done a wonderful job of assessing what I'm trying to say in a better way.
I think you're saying it beautifully, and I'm getting lucky with adding some additional words. You're making my job easy. So you come to Atlanta, still with three older children, but three children at home with you?
Yes. Yeah. Jason was 3, Greg was 4, 5, and Chris was 7.
Yeah, yeah. And so three still puts some wrinkles into home life. The other kid's in elementary school, but...
You haven't met him, but he definitely put a lot of wrinkles in.
Yeah.
But the other magnificent thing is... I prayed about where we were going to live, and I rented an apartment right down the street from St. David's.
Huh.
Over the phone. I had no idea what I was renting. It was absolutely magnificent.
Yeah.
When I pulled down the street the first time with the moving van coming behind me, and I saw St. David's here, it was like a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
And my first Sunday, they hadn't built the naves yet, but Hendry immediately took me in to show me the projected nave that was going to be built and how they had a campaign going to stimulate funds. And I had to say, I really appreciate you sharing all this. However, I can't share any funds, and I'm sure that's what you're looking for. And his comment, his retort to me, I knew I was in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you're a single mom. You have 3 little boys. You're a widow. Your first priority are your boys.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Mm-hmm.
So you felt at home and were able to put down roots here for a little while spiritually and with your family.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I imagine it wasn't easy. None of that sounds easy to me, apart from having the luck with finding a church nearby. Can you share what you're willing to share anyway about the challenges of being you, having said yes to the thing that God was saying yes to, and arriving in the place that you believe God was calling you to? Nonetheless, the road was a challenging road. Can you talk about that a little bit?
It was a challenging road, particularly when a vice president of the company had hired me. And the man that I worked with was obviously very jealous of having someone with other knowledge and more knowledge, and made some very sexually inappropriate moves toward me. And somewhere in the depths of my knowledge, and I have no clue where this came from, I started saving a lot of the stuff he was either saying or sending to me or whatever. And then I walked into that vice president's office one day and I laid it on his desk and I said, and he said, "What do you want?" I said, "I just want out of my contract." Mm-hmm. I had already found another job. I'd given myself a deadline. Needless to say, there was a lot of praying about how to handle this because my income was the primary source of our survival. And I'd been looking around a little bit, and I found a position that was the next exit down on 400. Mm-hmm. And I decided that I was going to give that a go. And they had made a very nice offer. And so I laid that out on his desk, and he said, "What do you want?" And I said, "I just want out of that my contract." And he said, "You've got it. And I will turn this over to personnel. And I just want you to know this is not the first time this has happened." And I walked away into my new job, and it was a fabulous, wonderful, life-enhancing job for me, which meant I could then be more encouraging to my children.
Right.
With the previous job, they were packing up their sleeping bags and going down and sleeping on the floor of the building where I was working. Yeah. That was not what a kid should be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you stayed then in this role with your new company for quite some time. About how long did that end up?
It was about 9 or 10 years.
9 or 10 years. Yeah.
And
long enough to really see the kids through the majority of their childhood.
Right.
And again, no preconceived notion that any of that would have been easy, because kids are challenging as they work through their childhoods. And in the best of times, that can be hard.
Absolutely. And there was no way I wanted these boys to miss anything that young boys should have, which was a challenge. That's a nice segue into sharing that the school contacted me to say that they thought that my youngest son needed some psychological help. And I could understand where that was coming from, because I'd already had them with a child psychologist in Pennsylvania, and I was also seeing a psychologist. And that was the impetus for me to find a good psychologist, and they recommended someone. And I saw her twice, and she saw the boys at the same time. We went as a family. And she said, "You need a man in your house. They have no man in their life." And so she said there was this young man that had just graduated from University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, with a degree of occupational therapy. And she thought he would be a good person for these boys to hang around with. And indeed, he would pick them up at school, and they would go off, and they'd trek through the woods, and they climb trees, and he'd give them challenging things. How are you going to get over this wall when there isn't any place to put your foot? And just very interesting things. And that grew into a whole business for him, where he ended up working with autistic children, because he started noticing ways he could help autistic children out of all this. But for them, this was a solid man that has been in their life. He came to their weddings. He came to their college graduations.
Oh, how beautiful. Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So did they all end up graduating from the area, or did you end up moving again while they were in school?
Yes, we did stay in that same house. I purchased a house shortly after we moved here, and the boys all lived there through their entire school career, all of them. During that time, I did remarry, and there were a number of issues that came about during that marriage that caused some, not difficulties, but challenges. When my second husband died, the boys were well on their own, and I, again, had to look at who was I, who did God want me to be as a single person? Naturally, I had never left my practice of contemplative prayer. When you have a second marriage with a number of children, you need that contemplative prayer because I'm not smart enough, wise enough, or anything else to be able to navigate that kind of relationship. And I really spent some quality time more than once, even just making the decision to get married the second time. There were a lot of good things about that were presented before that second marriage, and there were a lot of good things after that marriage. And I for me, it really was a very comforting and encouraging and empowering time in my life. But when my second husband died, I was faced once again with this question, where do I belong? Am I called to ordained ministry? Am I called to stay in the computer world? And who actually am I? Mm-hmm. And out of that came a minister who, as I'm walking out of church one day, he says, you know, you should go down to St. Joseph's and apply to be a chaplain. Hmm. And I thought I was the last one in the world they would hire to be a chaplain. But that caused me to spend a little time in, not a little time, really a lot of time in meditation and curious wondering and going back to my journaling to try to discern what is it I want, what is it God wants, and where are we together on this?
Yeah.
It came to the point that I filled out that application.
Wow.
Perfectly accepting that they were going to say, we don't want you. But amazingly, they said, no, we do want you. As a matter of fact, we're going to create a separate nighttime class just so those of us who were working and trying to get through this process could go to the nighttime CPE class. So for 6 months, I did something I would never recommend anybody do. I got up very early in the morning. I did my computer job for 8 hours. And then I got in the car and I drove down to St. Joe's and I was the hospital chaplain.
Goodness gracious. That, in a clinical pastoral education setting, so not just doing the work of chaplaincy, but also then dissecting all of it and dissecting you probably emotionally and spiritually as well.
Exactly.
Goodness
exactly.
gracious.
Exactly. And writing papers and reading books and doing all that very wonderful, mm-hmm. wonderful training in order to be able to be the person that I think God really called me to be. Mm-hmm. Yes, I had a talent to do job one.
Right.
But I really realized in that CPE program that this was really who I was.
Yeah.
And boy, did that ever open up some interesting doors.
I'm sure. So a couple of curiosities. One is the minister who encouraged you to make that application. Was this a person who knew you deeply and had just sort of watched your journey for a while and intervened, or was this somebody who probably shooting from the hip a little bit, dropped something into your lap?
No, this gentleman was not shooting from the hip.
Yeah.
He had known me for at least 10 years
yeah.
and had walked with me through a number of different, not tragedies, but events mm-hmm. in your life that could be perceived yeah. as a tragedy.
And so, from the vantage point external to your lived experience, could see something there and also potentially hear God's calling in your life in a way that maybe you could not. And so gave voice to it, which again, as a pattern, I think happens so very frequently out there. And yet it's unexpected frequently when it does happen that somebody else gets to be the voice that says, you know, you really need to do this. You still have to be the person to say yes to that and put pen to paper and fill out the application.
Absolutely.
But what a gift it was to have a companion in the journey that provided the impulse in that moment.
Exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right.
So then off to chaplaincy work.
Off to chaplaincy work,
yeah.
Which was a wonderful yeah. experience. And that also is what led to my moving to North Carolina.
Okay, yeah.
The St. Joe's offered me a job as a chaplain, mm-hmm. which I was very honored that they were willing to reach out to me in that way. But meanwhile, a priest I knew in North Carolina, totally out of the blue, sent me an email and asked me if I was interested in going to work for him. Hmm. And a lot of discernment.
Yeah.
I did do a lot of discernment over that. A lot of special surrendering to God, mm-hmm. that I would be doing his will. And things fit into place, and off to North Carolina I went. Primarily, I expressed it in a fashion that when you're a chaplain, you meet people in the most worst crisis of their life. It's either their spouse or their friend or their child, but it's the worst time of their life, or sometimes themselves. And I wanted to have an opportunity to work with people that I knew them from the time they were born until they got married, and then maybe at their death. And that was just a wonderful experience.
Yeah. What was the sort of job title there? Director of Pastoral Care or...
And
Christian Education.
Yeah.
Great.
No, they didn't have a whole lot of kids in Eastern North Carolina, so it was mostly pastoral care.
Yeah. You know, something that I'm thinking back to is the thread that connects that back to your 20s, your church ministry setting. It wasn't new exactly. There was a golden thread, but that's not always the thread that you were holding through this journey. And at times, maybe you couldn't hold it. Maybe you were too busy holding kids of your own to be involved there. But that there's a giftedness and a treasure within you that God was bringing back out. And that practically speaking, during some intervening years, you were pursuing something you were good at and something that was meaningful and provided value in the world. And that was all good and holy and appropriate and not at all counter to what God was asking you to do in your life. And that sometimes it just looks like that, that your vocation and your essential identity and all those things that, it's not so wrapped up in your work that a job change, a career change, so on and so forth, erodes some sense of who you are. And God's working with your giftedness and yourself, your authentic self, is going to bring about good. And in this case, God's brought you through to a place where that golden thread comes right back up in a shining and sort of glimmering way here in North Carolina at this point in your life.
I am very glad you mentioned that, because there's a piece of this whole journey that may be very informative to everyone. Because when I was working in the computer world, I always knew no matter where I worked or what I did, there would be a body of people that would be coming to me for advice, coming to me to cry on my shoulder because they were getting a divorce or something had happened to one of their children. And it became very clear to me that I had a ministry in that environment, in an environment where most people didn't go to church and had no interest in church. And there was a very deeply committed Orthodox Jew who would use me for his sounding board in many different ways. And I do think that exactly what you were saying is that we bring to the table, whatever table we're at, this golden thread. I love that image. It is a golden thread that obviously can be identified by people outside of us, sometimes better than we can identify it.
Sure. Yeah, we're too busy with all the other threads sometimes to see it. But to somebody standing just outside, you get to see the reflection of light off of that thread. And so it's a little bit more easily identified. I think when I speak to high school students, that a high school student with a strong sense of faith will sometimes look around in his or her life and see that the people who are pursuing faith as adults they're probably wearing a robe on Sunday in one way or another, or a special name tag, and maybe not have the ability to see themselves in one of those roles because of however they understand themselves to be in the world. Well, I'm really oriented toward engineering or accounting or something like that. And so I can't see myself as a minister or somebody doing public speaking over here or whatever the case may be, there are objections that we make. Each of us make objections in our different ways. In reality, what God desires is for each of us to be faithful in the place where God is placing us. And God desperately needs the computer engineer, the software engineer working in that building, or somebody in an accounting office or wherever else, to be faithful and to be faithful with the people that God is bringing into our lives. How else will God shine God's light through us and into this world that needs to see that light if there are not people willing to be faithful apart from wearing a robe on a Sunday?
That is so very true. And that reminds me that we are really all called to share love in whatever situation we're in, whether we're in a restaurant or standing in line waiting for the subway to come.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah.
Well, I know that there are intervening years between arriving in North Carolina and beginning this ministry and the Karen Wright that we know today. At the risk of glossing over what I have no doubt are really important stories, I wonder if you can share a little bit about whether that trajectory of companionship identified through contemplative prayer and discernment as an ongoing practice, whether that stayed with you from that moment until today, and the lessons that you learned in those, I'm guessing decades, couple decades worth of the journey, have those lessons been repeated, so to speak, or reemphasized in the next part of your life?
I'm not sure that they've been reemphasized in the next part of my life, but they certainly have been affirmed.
Mm-hmm.
And I did learn so much about the importance of the church, the importance of continuity and fun in the church, the importance of relationship.
Yeah.
You know, computer people are typically identified as strange folks that can't have relationships. And I really learned the importance of relationship in that environment, and how a very small little thing you might say to someone in a way of encouragement can go a long way.
Yeah.
Our world can be pretty darn tough.
Sure
it can be pretty judgmental and not very kind. And if you come to church, you should get the opposite.
Yeah. I encountered a phrase a long time ago. I have no idea who initially coined it, but I have never forgotten it. To be who you needed when you were younger, and to consider how many people were those encouraging companions on your journey who provided just enough grace when you needed it in times that were really difficult. On this side of your journey, I would say I know you to be somebody who turns back to others and provides grace and encouragement, and certainly know St. David's to be a place where that happens for a lot of people. And so, the importance of being in a community committed to unconditional love. And as we keep talking about with the way that God looks at us, the hope is that we will look at one another that way.
Amen. And that unconditional love is so important, so important to everyone. Yes.
So Karen, I wonder if you are discerning anything now, or if you are in a place in your life right now where you have questions that are shaped and useful to you in your journey of discernment this stage in your life.
I am always discerning different things. And yes, I am at this point in my life. Part of my discernment in this part of my life is I don't want to age in place. That's what the terminology is. I want to work on some kind of an arrangement where I feel welcome and have my needs cared for as my physical body deteriorates, and that's definitely going to be the case. In addition, I just constantly am looking at where I can serve, where I can give, and I don't mean monetarily give necessarily, but where I can give as a person to encourage someone else. Because we need to encourage a whole group of people that don't have white hair as I do.
when I look around North Fulton County, I frequently see young professionals who have been moved to this area or came to this area seeking employment and have landed here without a lot of family support, without a lot of friends in the area, and without then a community of support and unconditional love and mentorship potentially as well. And so the interesting opportunity, I think, for ministry, and you're not alone in wondering how to give of yourself in a way that would be meaningful to someone else.
And do you suppose that mentorship is also wisdom?
Oh, absolutely it is. Yeah.
What
I will say is that in this one conversation with you today, you've shared wisdom with me, and I'm grateful for it. I'm so appreciative that you would provide insight into your story and provide insight into your spiritual practice and share beautiful and meaningful wisdom with me and with those who are listening.
Well, it fills my heart with joy when I'm able to lift somebody up in any kind of way.
Yeah. Well, you do it well. And I am grateful. I know St. David's is grateful. And thank you so much for joining us today.
You are very welcome. Thank you for asking me.